There are three big problems with used vehicle appraisals. One, manually sifting through comp vehicles. Two, old book values and ghost comps. Three, no recon visibility. You can solve them all with AutoVision, now available from Reynolds and Reynolds. Learn more at reyrey.com/used cars. That's reyrey.com/used-cars.
Want to dive deeper into the topics you hear about on Daily Drive? We're offering listeners a special offer, 20% off a one-year Automotive News digital subscription. That gets you access to all of our news, information, and analysis made for automotive industry leaders like you. Go to autonews.com/dailydrivepromo to redeem. Welcome to Daily Drive for Thursday, May 9th, 2024. I'm Jamie Butters, executive editor of Automotive News in Detroit.
And I'm Kellen Walker in Las Vegas. Today on the show, Nissan misses its global sales target by a wide gap. Chevy will end production of the Malibu. And Ford revises its plans to be all electric in Europe. Plus, our own Hans Greimel joins the show from Tokyo to talk about Toyota's across-the-board record earnings.
They do have all this momentum building, but they say, of course, that it won't last forever.
Let's run through all the news you need to know to keep up in the auto industry.
Nissan says it missed its global sales target by a wide gap, as well as its profit margin goal for the fiscal year that ended on March 31st. The company also fell short on other objectives, such as electrification and capacity utilization. But the numbers were still up. Nissan saw a 51% increase in operating profit to $3.8 billion. Operating profit margin improved to 4.5% from 3.6% the year before. Net income nearly doubled to $2.8 billion. Revenue expanded 20% to almost $84 billion in the fiscal year as global sales expanded more than 4% to 3.4 million vehicles. Meanwhile, Nissan, with a 98-day supply of vehicles in the U.S., has a new idea to spur sales in the market. The automaker is letting its retailers advertise vehicle prices below invoice. It's the first time Nissan has done so widely since before the pandemic. Starting this month, dealers can market nearly the entire 2024 model year lineup at up to 10% below invoice. The aging Armada may be advertised up to 15% below.
General Motors plans to end production of the Chevrolet Malibu in November. That's so GM can use the Kansas plant that builds the sedan to assemble the next generation Chevy Bolt. The automaker says it will pause production of the Cadillac XT4 crossover at Fairfax Assembly from January 2025 until the plant comes back online later that year. Fairfax will then make both the gasoline-powered XT4 and the Bolt EV on the same assembly line. Spokesperson Kevin Kelly says that decision will give GM flexibility to respond to changes in customer demand. The Malibu is Chevy's last remaining sedan. The brand now sells two subcompact crossovers that cater to entry-level buyers, the Trax and Trailblazer.
Ford is rethinking its plan to sell only electric cars in Europe by 2030 as EV sales failed to take off in the region. In 2021, Ford announced its goal of selling only electric passenger cars in Europe by the end of the decade. The target was more ambitious than the European Union's plan to allow only zero-emission cars to be sold after 2035 as part of its CO2 reduction strategy. Ford now says it could continue to sell combustion engine cars after 2030 if buyers want them.
And Ford's head of design, Anthony Lowe, is leaving the company. The automaker says he's leaving to, quote, explore new opportunities. Ford says Lowe made the decision to leave himself without saying where he is moving to. Lowe joined Ford in 2021, taking over from Murray Callum. He moved to Ford from Renault Group, where he was the French automaker's vice president of exterior design. At Ford, Lowe oversaw designs including the Lincoln Model L100 concept, a sleek, low-slung self-driving sedan said to be powered by a solid-state battery. Under Lowe, Ford also redesigned the newest generation Mustang. And those are today's headlines. Jamie, Nissan misses its global sales target. That brand can't seem to catch a break. What's going on over there?
Well, you know, they're kind of really caught between two worlds. You know, they used to be a brand and a company that really pushed for growth, looking at for volume, maybe even more so than profit. During the pandemic and really in the wake of Carlos Ghosn's ouster, they really focused on the brand positioning and seeking a profit margin per vehicle. So the profit margin was pretty good, not quite to the goal, but pretty close. But the volume was nowhere near close. So they're just a little bit torn between the two directions.
Sounds like someone doesn't know who their identity is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as you think back through the company's history, I mean, its identity was so wrapped up in Carlos Ghosn. He was the savior of Nissan, sent by Renault. He kept the company out of bankruptcy, made it a global power again, and, you know, was really strong. But it was all, you know, in that one guy. And when he got pushed out and arrested, it has left a hole. And even though they've had Uchida and other leaders, it hasn't quite gelled as to what is Nissan now.
Well, I hope they figure it out. Coming up, our own Hans Greimel talks about Toyota's monster earnings report and why the world's largest automaker is tapping the brakes on expansion. That's next on Daily Drive.
Data is the backbone of your used vehicle department, but finding the right data and using it to build accurate comp sets can be difficult. How often do you find yourself making manual adjustments to pricing recommendations? Reynolds' newest inventory management solution, AutoVision, can help. Jose Mendoza, general manager at San Leandro Honda, explains how AutoVision sets his business apart.
Everybody's going on third-party vendor sites to see what they're priced at out there. Everybody's looking at auction data. Everybody's looking at transaction data, if you can get it. So the only thing that really is going to make a difference for you is what you're selling them at. So I think you have to weigh that a little bit heavier than you do everything else. It doesn't matter if the market says you can sell this car for $30,000 if the last three you've sold have been at 27. We have reports set up through our DMS, through Reynolds & Reynolds, and through AutoVision, which is what we use for our used cars. And we have reports set up in those. And it's something that I think is important to constantly be talking about and constantly be going over.
AutoVision can help you run your used vehicle department with precise comp sets, real-time inventory data, and reconditioning insights. Visit reyrey.com/used cars to find out more. That's reyrey.com/used-cars.
Welcome back to Daily Drive. I'm Jamie Butters with Kellen Walker. Automaker earnings are a routine story here on Daily Drive, but this week's earnings report from Toyota was anything but routine. The world's largest automaker says it made more money than it ever has, and results set records in every category. But CEO Koji Sato says the record expansions won't continue by design. Automotive News Asia editor Hans Greimel has been all over the story. He joins me now from Tokyo to talk about it. Hans Greimel, welcome back to Daily Drive.
Thanks. Good to be here.
I know you are in a busy week. We appreciate you taking a little time out. This is Japan automaker earnings week. The big one yesterday was Toyota. And wow, just incredible numbers. I mean, we knew they were going to be big, but just records across the board. Run down some of the highlights for us, if you will.
Well, it was a banner year for Toyota. They had records literally across the board, everything from sales volume and production volume to revenue and operating profit and net income. And we're not just talking about incremental gains. We're talking really about shattering records here. Just from last year, operating profit and net income both nearly doubled over last year's total, which was, at the top end of its range already. So, you know, Toyota has been killing it literally in recent years, but this is not just something that just turned on a switch automatically. This has kind of been building up in a kind of a building block strategy, like putting Legos on top of each other over many years now. You know, CEO Koji Sato has been in office now for 1 year now, basically. He's this kind of concludes his first year in office, and it's quite a way for him to finish up his first year at the helm. But of course, he's kind of riding momentum that was put into place by his predecessor, Akio Toyoda, who'd been there for more than a decade. You know, how long can this continue? Toyota's pretty clear about it. It's not going to continue very long. They have to take a break here, cool down, regroup, reposition for the long term so that they can continue growing at a sustainable rate, not necessarily keeping on at the sprinter's pace.
You did a great job with those numbers, but I need to stress a couple of things here. Revenue jumped 21% to almost $300 billion, and net income more than doubled to $32.7 billion US with the currency translations. So, I mean, that is a net margin of more than 10%. The rule of thumb in the auto industry, I think, is, you know, 5% is a good margin in the auto industry, and this was 10%. The net income more than doubling is huge. And I mean, $30+ billion in net income is almost inconceivable in the auto industry. And so, I mean, really amazing numbers for Toyota. I do wonder how much the results, as you said, a lot of it, it's a big slow moving industry. Most of the results of performance of this past 12 months was set up by under Akio Toyoda, although Mr. Sato had a big role in the company even before he was CEO. So we give him a little credit for that. But it seems like some of it had to do with the momentum of recovering from the pandemic. Toyota originally kind of thought they still had really solid chip supply and that they faced the same inventory challenges as everyone else. Here in the U.S., they still are really understocked at most dealerships. Inventories remain low, but they're up. I wonder if that plays into both the outsized growth and maybe that sense of the lack of sustainability going forward.
You're right. That is a big credit to them. They're coming out of COVID now. Supply is still tight, but you know they're running at top rate basically. Their sales volume is stretched to the limit. So is their production capacity. Their tight inventories help them sell profitable cars at profitable rates. They made a point of that in yesterday's announcement that they're selling basically more up-level cars now. They're selling at higher price levels, and they're selling more hybrids as well, which plays into their calculation because hybrids typically fetch a higher price and a higher margin. And their profitability is at least as good as their ICE cars now, is what Toyota says. So they do have all this momentum building, but they say, of course, that it won't last forever. One of the warning points that they talked about yesterday was that, yes, the incentives are extremely low right now, but that will change. It's already changing, but going into this current fiscal year, which runs through March of 2025, next March, that they're going to see their U.S. incentives increased significantly, and that will also eat into their profitability in the current fiscal year. Now, take that with a grain of salt, because when Toyota increases its incentives, they're usually not at the extreme end of the industry range. So they're not going to be playing in the deep incentive pool probably that we see some other makers play in. But still, by their own standards, they will be increasing incentives to capture more volume going ahead.
Just for a little context, I happen to have the Motor Intelligence incentive estimates on my screen. Toyota, this is not in the fiscal year that you just reported on, but for the most recent month, April, at the beginning of the new fiscal year that they're warning about, you know, Toyota's incentives more than doubled, but they rose from $808 to $1,724. Meanwhile, for comparison, you know, General Motors went from almost $2,000 to more than $3,300. So GM's rose less, but the gap between them is farther. So just as one example, between the two biggest selling automakers in the U.S., Toyota's being very judicious with their incentives. You know, you wrote a really insightful piece heading into the earnings, looking at a handful of the headwinds that Toyota's facing. and one that had been pretty well signaled, but really seems to be what Mr. Sato's keying on is the rampant growth. I mean, that they've just had so much growth. They've been pushing the factories and their suppliers so hard to catch up, to meet that unmet demand, and maybe looking at a need to pause or take a breather this year. What's the thinking in Toyota right now?
Part of it comes from there's some of their domestic problems that they've had here in Japan, and that don't really see the knock-on effects directly in overseas markets such as the United States. But they've had a string of scandals here related to testing and safety testing and emissions testing that affected Hino, its truck-making subsidiary, and its mini car maker, Daihatsu, and then one of its other group affiliates, Toyota Industries, which manufactures certain vehicles for Toyota. They also got hit by a testing scandal as well. And one of the root causes of all this was just this pressure for these subsidiaries to keep up with the rampant demand and keep growing. And it was really overstretching their product development resources. It was overstretching their product verification and testing resources. And Toyota came to realize that and thought, well, okay, we got to take a break, reinvest in some of our human capital in terms of training and education and better working conditions. We have to kind of ease the workload on everybody so they're not feeling all stressed out and overstretched all the time. And what they're trying to do is kind of slow things down so they can reevaluate literally every step of the work process throughout the company. And that stems from the offices to the factory floor. And they're asking every worker now basically to spend 30 minutes a day. And this is directly from the executives at yesterday's announcement, spend 30 minutes a day thinking about how they can improve their own work and how they can basically improve their own career path going forward into the future. So these are all kinds of traditional Toyota methods to kind of look back, reassess the work, think what's really necessary, and just get back to the core basics of their workload, basically, so that they can reinvent the work for a new era that's more efficient.
My brain is just exploding. So on the one hand, you're right. I mean, yes, it is what Toyota does. It's usually what Toyota does during like an economic downturn. You know, have people try to find the Kaizens, try to find ways to make their job more efficient while they're under less pressure to produce. But at the same time, like, it is not the nature of the Toyota brand or the Lexus brand to let up, you know? So I'll be very curious, you know, is this going to, did they say, I mean, this isn't going to be 30 minutes a day for the entire year, right? This will go for some period of time while they reevaluate their jobs. I don't know if they had said, you would have included it in your report. I know, but it's so unusual, right, for a major global company to literally say, we're going to pause. I mean, it's let up on the growth when they're doing it seemingly so well. You bring up the good point about the scandals at home with the companies that we don't see so much here in North America, but It is just an incredible management move.
Well, it's something that they've done before, actually, and it happened under Akio in his early years at the helm. And the trigger then was the global recall crisis that happened like in late 2000, I guess started around 2009, but really took off in 2010, and then I guess kind of lingered on into 2011. But that was a fundamental soul-shaking crisis for Toyota, and they traced that back to this kind of pursuit of rampant growth. At the time, they were trying to get to 10 million sales globally, and Akio put his finger on that numerical target as kind of corrupting the mindset of the company. And since then, they've basically sworn off these kind of long-range numerical goals like that. And part of his solution was this thing called a odoriba, or a landing, like a landing of a staircase. You're climbing up a staircase and you get to a landing to take a break. And that's what they were at. They were at a landing taking a break on the staircase of growth and to regroup and reposition themselves to reinvest in a stronger, sustainable growth going forward. And that is what we see happening now. They've raced very quickly up till now. They need to stop for a breather and shift into a long-range mode. And the way they described it, this is something they signaled earlier this year, actually. And the way they described it at the time was shifting from sprint mode into marathon mode so that they can keep this cruising pace going long-term. That's one of Sato's biggest challenges, I would say, in his young tenure at the helm, is shifting from that fast, rapid growth, making it continue in an upward trajectory, but a long-term sustainable.
You make the great point. And I guess just, you know, the difference was that other crisis that really started from the leadership of Akio's predecessor, Watanabe, was very much U.S.-centric. You know, it was the U.S. was where the complaints of unintended acceleration were coming from, and, you know, where Jim Lentz had to go before Congress and have some difficult discussions. There was, you know, a lot of change. There were some structural changes for a while that have kind of reverted. But this one with these, I don't say localized because it's where the headquarters are, so it's important. But the scandals with Hino, Daihatsu, and Toyota Industries, they don't resonate here in the North American market as much, so it feels different. But you make a really good point where they maybe grew too fast, stretched too hard, and needed to regroup.
Right. I mean, for Daihatsu, just to put it in perspective a little bit there, for Daihatsu, for example, a lot of this came, the Daihatsu scandal really kind of hit home here in the January to March quarter, and sales in Japan fell by half or nearly half in Japan for Toyota. So that's a big problem right in their backyard. So it hits home when it happens here.
Where does Toyota stand in this process on EVs? They have been so far behind the other automakers, which hurt them for a while when investors were so obsessed with bold EV plans. It probably helps their bottom line in the near term, in this immediate past and probably the coming year, that they're much more focused on hybrids and large production of hybrid vehicles rather than EVs. But if we look out 5 or 10 years, I mean, EVs are going to be a big part of the global market, big here in the US, big in China, as well as Europe and eventually Japan. What's the thinking? I know Sato really jump-started some of the work on EVs, but of course it takes time to do that kind of work.
Right. I mean, they're still in their process of trying to come out with a next generation EV in the 2026 timeframe, and that will have a completely new architecture, hopefully some new battery technologies. And they are confident about the idea of actually introducing a new kind of look to the cars with a lower center of gravity, really maximizing the potential of the layout with the small upfront engine room or a motor cabin, if you will, low nose with big visibility and large greenhouses and things like that. So the concept cars that we saw from Lexus at the Tokyo Mobility Show last year kind of give an idea of what they have in store. And they talked about this, Sato-san talked about this at the earnings announcement. And he said, yes, what they're doing now is they're basically bankrolling all this cash. I mean, they're rolling in cash now. And they're channeling that back not only into this human resources and kind of reassessing the situation, but also into growth areas. So how they're spending their CapEx and their R&D now, it used to be more tilted toward, let's say, production vehicles. Now they're really piling it into, they're tilting that equation and increasing the overall amounts to focus on growth technologies such as artificial intelligence, electrification, software-defined vehicles, etc. So for this year, for example, in those new growth technologies, they're going to pile in about $11 billion alone in just this one year. So they've got lots of money and they're not afraid to spend it on the future.
Hans, I could talk with you all day about Toyota and their performance and Sato-san's plans, but we're going to have to leave it there. We know you're going to keep on top of it. You've got the rest of earnings week to cover as we wrap up, put a bow on this fiscal year in Japan. Look forward to keeping in touch with you in the coming months. Hans Greimel is our editor in Japan. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jamie.
That's Daily Drive for today. I'm Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker. Thanks to Automotive News executive producer Jake Neer, as well as our own Irvash Kakaria and Lindsay Van Hulley for their reporting for today's podcast. We also had reporting from Nick Gibbs of our sibling publication, Automotive News Europe. You can get the latest news on earnings results, lineup changes, and everything happening in the auto industry at autonews.com.
Come back tomorrow for a conversation with Ann Hay, Chief Marketing Officer of Payneer Me, about lessons auto lenders should take from the company's recent survey.
We want to determine how important convenience and hyper-personalization are to consumers during the loan repayment process. And we also wanted to explore the gaps between consumer expectations and their current experience.
We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show and the topics we covered today. Send us an email at dailydrive@autonews.com or leave us a voicemail at 313-444-2774. And if you enjoy the podcast, remember to like, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.